Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
I'm John Oran, Puck's sports correspondent, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity, where I will take you inside the executive suites and owner's boxes that run the entire sports business. Twice a week, I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media and give you a window into the inside conversations that are happening throughout sports media. So be sure to follow and listen to The Varsity Podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This from my guy, Seth, to start the show. Seth emails me a lot. Big listener, Seth in Potomac. And Seth sends some good stuff. I would say, you know, 80% of the stuff from Seth is thought-provoking and usually insightful. But this one is interesting, and we will talk about it here. He writes, "Kevin, you are way too optimistic about Cliff Kingsbury. We all thought a good quarterback and OC, finally, would lead to taking advantage of Terry McLaurin's abilities. And through two games, Terry's got 8 catches for 39 yards, which equals 4.9 yards per reception. How does a rookie receiver with Daniel Jones at quarterback get targeted 18 times in just his second game, and Terry gets close to ignored? I'll hang up and listen." Thank you, Seth. We'll get to addressing Seth's email here in a moment. Real quickly, we've got two guests on the show today. Dan Pizzuta from the 33rd team. We'll talk some NFL and talk some Washington Commanders with Dan at 11. And then Scott will be on the show at noon. Scott Van Pelt will be on with us at noon. He's actually at... he's leaving now. But he was at the park early this morning interviewing Jaden Daniels for a Monday Night Countdown show interview. The main group from ESPN, and by the way, the main crew from ESPN ABC, Joe Buck, Troy Aikman, will be in Cincinnati, even though there's a doubleheader. It's not really a doubleheader. It's almost a... They're doing the thing where they start one game about an hour or 45 minutes before the Monday night lineup. We have our first two-game Monday night part of the schedule. Jags-Bills at 7:30 on ESPN, and then Washington at Cincinnati on ABC. And Scott and the Monday night countdown crew with Ryan Clark and, you know, Marcus Spears and now Jason Kelsey will be in Cincinnati, and he... I was talking to him this morning as he was on his way out to the park to interview Jaden Daniels for that. So he'll come on with us at noon and talk to us about his experience out there today, because it's his first time sitting down with Jaden. And I think he'll probably spend some time with Adam Peters and Dan Quinn, maybe. I don't know. But he'll be on with us at noon. Yeah, we'll do some NFL buy and sell today. It's Wednesday, and Denton's got 5 burning NFL questions for me. We'll see how that goes, and maybe make it a regular during football season on Wednesdays or Thursdays. So back to what Seth wrote about not taking advantage of Terry McLaurin's abilities, not, you know, force-feeding him the ball. I mean, how many conversations have we all had over the last couple of years, whether it was Scott Turner or Eric Bieniemy, whether it was Carson Wentz or Taylor Heineke or Sam Howell or whatever quarterbacks, you know, were in there. I mean, you've got to get the ball to Terry McLaurin. I mean, I've got friends of mine. One of my favorite people when it comes to talking about this team and following this team is Tim Legler, you know, the NBA analyst, and we have Tim on the show a couple of times a year. He's a massive Washington fan. He comes to every game. And every week from Tim, basically, "I don't understand why they're not force-feeding Terry McLaurin." Well, look, part of the reason, and it's definitely a good reason, for Terry not being among statistically the receivers in the league in receptions, total receptions, or even yardage. You know, last year, Terry was, I think, 20th. Here, I'm pulling it up right now because I don't want to get this wrong. In the 23 regular season, and of course it was not a very good season, but Terry was 28th in yardage, and in receptions, he was 24th in the league. In 2022, when they had a better team, and by the way, you could say a more effective offense with Taylor Heinicke and Scott Turner, even though they didn't throw the ball as much, Terry was 25th in receptions, and he was 10th in yardage. All right, he's never been anywhere near the touchdown leader, and in part because they just haven't been very good offensively, as we know. But yeah, I mean, even though he gets recognized as a number one receiver and as a good NFL receiver, the statistics really haven't backed it up. You know, he's in the 20s somewhere statistically. And in most of the recent rankings in the last, you know, or lists that we read from, you know, he's somewhere between 18 and 22 on average in the league. So I think the Terry McLaurin conversation, which I feel like we have a half dozen times during the course of a season and even another 2 to 3 times during the offseason, it starts with this, okay? Number one is he's a good receiver. Number two is he's a really good culture guy. You know, those two things are givens. And we don't need to think in terms of, oh, he's not very good at all, or they should trade him, or they shouldn't feature him. No, he's a good receiver, and he's really been a phenomenal Washington football team player, Washington Redskin, Washington football team player, and Washington Commander. He really has been. But the quick answer to Seth's email is, I think, probably close enough to the truth. And to the right answer, and that is, he's not the kind of receiver you force feed because of several things. Number one, he's not a take the top off of a defense guy. Number two is, he's a good route runner. He's not an exceptional route runner, meaning that it's not like he's always open. And number three is, there's no attribute to him physically that stands out. He's not big. He's not strong. You know, he's not A.J. Brown. He's not, you know, Jamar Chase. He's not the route runner and speed guy that Justin Jefferson is. He's a good receiver. There's nothing wrong with saying Terry's a good receiver. And on this team in recent years, he's been a number one. And the truth is for at least a third of the teams in the league, Terry would have been a number one guy. And of course, we have said, and I think it's fair to say, well, you know, the problem that we, you know, with Terry and the evaluation of him is, it's just not fair because, you know, he hasn't had a quarterback. He hasn't had a coordinator. He's not been on a very good team, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, those things apply a lot of the time. I mean, it's not like, you know, DK Metcalf or Tyler Lockett or Smith Njigba or, you know, I'm just trying to think of guys here in recent years. I mean, look, I mean, I think you would have gone into last year not one, you know, wondering whether or not Evans and Godwin had the kind of offense. It's not that every really good receiver can't thrive with an average to subpar, you know, offense, quarterback-wise, coordinator-wise. But there is something to that, no doubt. And I would point to Devontae Adams, right? Devontae Adams, with Aaron Rodgers, was considered to be either the best receiver in the league or certainly top three. Now, his numbers in Vegas have still been pretty damn good, but I think the perception of his numbers and his play has dipped because they just haven't had the quarterback. But, you know, Devontae Adams, an elite receiver in Green Bay, you know, still ended up being targeted in 2022 on that Vegas team that had Derek Carr at quarterback the most number of times in his career. He still had 100 receptions. He still had over 1,500 yards. He still had 14 touchdowns. And in 2023 last year, with Aiden O'Connell, a rookie quarterback for much of the year, he had his second most targets. He had 103 receptions, and he had 1,144 yards. I mean, there are receivers at an elite level that thrive with excellent quarterbacking, but don't dip with average to subpar average, to sub-average quarterbacking. The bottom line is, guys, he's not a receiver you force feed to. And by the way, with a young quarterback who, you know, errs on the side right now of making plays off schedule, making plays with his legs, most of those plays turn typically into runs. You know, the idea of just force-feeding a guy rather than getting him to go through progressions and throw to the open guy. You know, there are teams and there are systems that have star receivers where it's like, really what we want you to do, quarterback, is we want you to go through your progressions and throw to the correct guy, throw to the guy that's open. You know, a lot of times our best guy takes so much of the coverage that we've got a mismatch somewhere else, and that's the right place to go with the football. The goal is to move the football and to score points. But when you have elite guys, I mean, even Cousins, you know who's Mr. Process-oriented in Minnesota, you know, would talk all the time, I throw to where my reads take me. But the truth is, in recent years, he would put balls up for grabs and give Justin Jefferson, because he's so elite, opportunities to make a play, even though perhaps it was risky sometimes with even double coverage or bracketed coverage. But Terry's a good receiver. He's not an elite receiver. He's right now, two-thirds of the league, certainly half the league, has a better number one wide receiver than Terry McLaurin. It's just true. That's why, Seth. That's why. Now, would I expect his numbers to be better than what they've been in terms of yards per reception? I would, yeah. I mean, that's fair. But there's been a lot of horizontal football, especially in the first halves. There hasn't been an opportunity to take many shots, or they haven't tried to take shots, except for one to Terry in the Tampa game. There was an opportunity off schedule for Terry in the Tampa game. And there were a couple of looks to Terry in the Giant game, but the coverage was not where Jaden wanted to go. You know, I talked specifically yesterday and kind of breaking down the offensive part or the Jaden part of the game Sunday as best as I can, because I'm far from a film expert. But, you know, there was an opportunity on one of the plays he got sacked on the primary was Terry, and the safety was, you know, shading in Terry's direction, and then he missed McCaffrey one-on-one with a linebacker. And then the next play was the play he got hurt on when he scrambled, and that play was a home run ball to McCaffrey if his eyes are down the field. But Terry's a good receiver. He's great for the culture. Do I expect Terry's numbers to increase in terms of yards per reception? 100%. Because there's going to be a couple of balls that are big ones to Terry McLaurin. There's going to be a matchup where he's in true man coverage and he's able to get separation against the corner. And Jaden, who throws an excellent deep ball, he does. You'll see it. And he'll hit him. Obviously, Terry's average would be far different if Jaden hadn't overthrown him in the Tampa game on the first play of the third quarter. I'm not overly concerned about 8 catches, 39 yards in 2 games with the way the games have been played. Now, if this were to hold up, that would be strange. I don't think it will. But at the same time, you're not going to end up with Terry McLaurin, you know, being in the top 10 in the league or top 15 in the league in receptions and reception yardage. He hasn't been previously, and I don't think he's going to be now. Look, it's a lot of coordinators and a lot of quarterbacks, and here we are on another coordinator and another quarterback, and nobody seems to be interested in force-feeding Terry the ball. He's not that guy. You want him to get catches. You want to see him get separation and be fed the ball, but not force-fed the ball. I think that, you know, I don't know that Terry right now on the team is going to be the guy that actually gets the most separation in terms of route running. I don't know who that is. I'm thinking it could be Noah Brown. I'm thinking it could be somebody like Zach Ertz. Zach Ertz is a pretty good route runner for a tight end. But anyway, Seth, thought-provoking, yes. Another Terry conversation. I feel like we have them all the time. But, you know, certainly the numbers to start have some people alarmed, you know, at the eight catches for 39 yards. And, you know, we saw a rookie receiver in his second game get targeted 18 times by Daniel Jones. It's a good point. You know, it's not like, you know, they've got this juggernaut offense where they can just, you know, Malik Nabers got drafted by a team most people would say isn't going to be able to, you know, feature him enough. Not a good enough offense, not a good enough quarterback. Well, guess what? Malik Nabers is an elite receiver. He's an elite talent. He was open all day. Part of that could be the Washington defense as well. 10 catches on 18 targets. That's not necessarily a great hit rate. But one of them was a drop, and a massive drop in the game on 4th and 4. He's going to be fun to watch, but a pain in the you-know-what to deal with for everybody else in the division, especially if the Giants were to get an actual quarterback. Paulie sent me something on DM that I wanted to read. This would be, you know, 757 Paulie. He wrote, "Is the defense being bad truly alarming to you? Don't see why it would be. They traded away their two best pass rushers, Sweat and Young, and didn't address that need in the offseason. The linebackers are all new, led by a good but aging vet in Wagner. Luvu was a good sign, but who is the third linebacker? The corners are struggling. Second-year player who's now hurt in Forbes. Benjamin St. Juice, who I like, but he's also a little raw. The slot is manned by a rookie. The safeties are also new. Chin is clearly still figuring it out, while Quan is a first-year starter in his second year. If this defense will be any good, they will have to continue to play together and get and gel under a new scheme with a first-time coordinator. Early struggles should be expected more than alarming." So I agree with that. Early season struggles, of course. I mean, anytime you have a team with as many off-season changes as Washington has, and you get four or five of those teams every year, especially when you're talking about, you know, coaching changes, front office changes, but they also had a major roster overhaul. So yes, I expect early season struggles. I think we talked a lot about that. I talked about it more so with respect to the offense, but yes, early season struggles, totally expected. But it was the Giants on Sunday who came in and ran the ball down Washington's throat for starters, and then play actioned the hell off of that to wide open people. And if they had had a kicker, they probably win the game. That's why I used alarming as a way to describe the defense through 2 weeks. If it had been, you know, say the Cowboys who had come in and done that, or Detroit who had come in and done that, or Houston who had come in and done that, that's one thing. But it was the Giants who came in and rushed the ball at a clip of 6 yards per carry. And Daniel Jones, who literally was a mental mess coming into this game, all of a sudden got comfortable because they were able to play action off the ability to run, which gave him some time, and hit, you know, Malik Nabers 10 times, you know, throw in the game, you know, touchdown passes to Nabers and to Wandale Robinson, two touchdown passes in the game in the red zone when the opponent knew that they couldn't kick a field goal, which should have been, to a certain degree, advantage defense. But I get it. There's also advantage offense because you have four downs. You know, when you know you have four downs, that's also an advantage. But I think, Paulie, that's where, I know it's two games, and I'm not going to declare through two games that the defense is going to suck this year. But I think it's legitimate, I do anyway, to be concerned. And the reason being is that it was the Giants who did what they did. You know, the pass rush and the run stopping early enough in the game and the first down offense, first down defense early in the game against Tampa was much more promising than what happened against the Giants. I know that they were banged up at corner, but when we say banged up at corner, they were missing Emmanuel Forbes. I know people want to make a big deal about Jamin Davis not being active for the game, but Jamin Davis only played 12 snaps against Tampa. Jamin Davis is still learning a new position. Like, was Jamin Davis the real difference maker not being active in the game? I don't think so. I do think defensive ends in the game on Sunday were a bit of an issue. I do think pass rush was a bit of an issue, but it's really hard in the NFL to either scheme up or to just get with four good pass rush when you're getting shredded in the run game. I mean, the best pass protection for a team that may struggle at times in pass protection is a run game. And I do know that play action works often even when you're not running the ball consistently. But when you are running the ball consistently, it really sort of nullifies and puts in conflict a defense when it comes to pass rush. So I defensively am not declaring anything after 2 weeks, because I want to give it time. There is a lot new there. And there have been players that I expected to play well with the coaching staff that they had because they were familiar, right, with the schemes. You know, whether it's Armstrong or Fowler Jr., et cetera. Wagner, et cetera. Wagner's been okay, by the way. Wagner's actually been one of the better players defensively. But Chin, a new player, struggling a little bit. Luvu, I mean, the energy level is obvious. That's kind of fun to watch. But they were clearly deficient in sort of gap control defensively. Tackling's been an issue in the first two games. But for me, Paulie, ultimately, what really became a concern is that if you're going to kind of have a good result early in the season, it should come against a team like the Giants, or at least I thought it should. I don't think Devin Singletary should have rushed for 95 yards on 16 carries. I don't think as a team they should have rushed for 6 yards a carry. I think Malik Nabers looked like, I mean, I think Wandale Robinson can make plays. I think Slayton can make plays. But when you know that there's a number one on the other side, and Malik Nabers clearly to everybody in the league already is a true number one, he can't get targeted 18 times and catch 10 balls. Like somehow that's, and you know, drop one or two of them that he had an opportunity to catch it, and clearly a big one. So it's more about the opponent there, I would say. Hey, one other thing from, actually two other things from the game, and just watching the All-22 and just focusing on a couple of things that I'd written down in my notes. I can't find, and if somebody knows the answer to this, because I don't think it's been asked of Quinn, because I looked at every transcript answer. Why did the dude number 57, Nick Ballor, why did he get called for unsportsmanlike conduct on the kickoff following the first field goal, which gave the Giants their first possession at the start at the 47-yard line? It shows up nowhere on game tape or All-22. He comes down. He actually makes the tackle. He actually sheds a block and ends up making the tackle. I don't know why he was flagged for unsportsmanlike. Denton, do you know the answer to that or not?
I have not seen any explanation or read any explanation. Maybe it was something taunting related, but I didn't see anything when I watched it.
I can tell you this. The All-22 in the game tape do not show any. He sheds a block. He makes a tackle. He runs off the field. I don't. Maybe he came back onto the field during the break when the All-22 play cuts off. That's possible. If anybody knows the answer, I just may have missed it. If anybody knows the answer to that, call 301-230-0980 or tweet me at Kevin Sheehan DC. I'm really curious to know what that unsportsmanlike conduct penalty was after the kickoff, after the first field goal of the game, the kickoff after Washington made it 3-0 on that long drive. And the only other thing I'm just going to say, and I said it on Monday a little bit, and then Denton hit me with the PFF number. I don't want to really make any sort of declaration on John Allen through two games, but I think Daron Payne has played pretty well in the first two games. I think he's been at times impossible to block. Now, is it possible that he's not holding up the gap and instead he's overrunning? That happened a couple of times. Overran Daniel Jones on a possible sack. He was responsible for multiple pressures again of the opposing quarterback without getting a sack. It would be nice to see them get sacks. And by the way, the pressure on Daniel Jones much less than it was on Baker Mayfield the week before. But I would bet you that the coaching staff doesn't have an issue right now with 94's play. Unless he's actually supposed to be kind of just gap control, not trying to get into the backfield and be disruptive. Because nobody's really been able to block him consistently in the first two games. Jeremy Chinn, on the other hand, man, he has taken some bad angles at tackles in the box. They got to fix that part, man. You cannot be a good defense if you can't stop the run. Just impossible to be a good defense if you're a bad run defense. Right now, Washington's defense is 32nd, dead last in DVOA through the first two games. They are dead last in third downs. Obviously, that's a huge traditional statistical number. Huge. They are, you know, but the opener against Tampa, not as bad against the run until maybe the second half when they got a little tired and they got worn down. It was from the jump Sunday that Devin Singletary was ripping off 6, 7, 8 yards a carry. Can't have that. Cannot have that. They've got to be better or stopping the run, or it's going to be a long season because they don't have natural game-changing pass rush talent. Certainly not off the edge. They don't have that. So if you're getting shredded with the run, now what are you going to do? Now you're going to scheme up some pass rush against play action. Well, you're going to do that with Jamar Chase on the field. You're going to do that with Marvin Harrison Jr. on the field in the next 2 weeks. You know, you're going to do that. That's going to be a massive problem. I think the best defense for Washington here early in the season has to be their offense. Ball control, dominating time of possession like they did Sunday. I mean, if the Giants had had more opportunities in the game, I think they would have been, defensively, there would have been even bigger problems. Look, they got off the field in the second half. They forced a fumble. That's huge. Takeaways will certainly, you know, mask a defense that's getting shredded if you ultimately turn that team over. And they got their first takeaway of the season. And by the way, it wasn't you know, an offensive mistake. It was a big-time punch-out by Benjamin St. Juice. You know, they forced a punt on the Giants' second drive, although he really did miss Robinson, who was open, Daniel Jones did, on a bad throw. But after that, it was touchdown 13 plays, and then they're on the move again, potentially on the verge of walking this game off. And their best receiver, and maybe the best football player on the field Sunday, Malik Nabers, dropped a pass. But, I mean, that first drive, Singletary for 8. Jones on a zone read keeper for 6. And then you had Singletary for a 7-yard touchdown run. You have to stop the run. Singletary, second drive, a 22-yard run. It's not going to happen defensively, and it's going to make for a season in which, at best, they're treading water, but probably much worse than that. Stopping the run is going to be a key every single week now. You've got to, because even a one-dimensional offense that this defense is facing still might be a problem for this defense. A versatile, multi-dimensional offense against this defense, and you're just going to have to pray that Jaden Daniels can keep the team on the field for 15 plays in 9 minutes, two or three times a game. Let me know, Denton, if anybody calls about the unsportsmanlike. I can't find that anywhere. I don't know what that penalty was. It's not in the game book. It's not, you know, it's just unsportsmanlike. It's listed as. I don't know why that was called. All right. We'll get to some Denton news. There was some interesting news around the league. And the Mets taking care of the Nats as they're chasing down a playoff spot. That's next.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and, for shoppers, buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
I'm John Oran, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity. I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media. Available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right. What do you got?
A lot of you firing in some Terry McLaurin passion, and I'll get to that in a moment. We'll get to Denton's news as well. But the what do you got? I got two of them, and they're both within the division. This was Jerry Jones talking after the Saints destroyed the Cowboys on Sunday. By the way, just as a reminder now, because we spent a lot of time in the offseason kind of talking about the last Cowboy game, for Dan Quinn as the defensive coordinator last year, where they gave up, you know, 48 points to Green Bay? Was it 48 to 32, whatever it was? Their next home game after that playoff loss was Sunday against the Saints. They gave up 44. And by the way, the Saints totally took their foot off the gas pedal in the fourth quarter. They could have scored 50-plus easily against Mike Zimmer's defense. So Jerry, you know, was talking about the loss and the bad loss and, you know, last year in the playoffs getting run out of the building by Green Bay. I want you to listen to his kind of logic now, or his rationalization, or maybe his hope of what this portends. Here's what he said.
And so that's just what we've got. If we've got anything that albatross around our neck, is that we've been a good to very good team during the season over the last 4 or 5 years with Mike, and we haven't done well in the playoff. So let's trade some challenges during the season for doing well in the playoff, if you want to look at it that way.
Can you imagine? Like, he's twisting himself into a pretzel right now. That had to be just awful to see a team come in and hang 35 on them in the first half. It was easy. And now it's like, well, you know, we've been a good to very good regular season team, and we haven't done well in the playoffs. So now let's not be very good in the regular season and then turn it on in the postseason, in the playoffs. Of course, that'd be fine. But I don't think you can really play it that way. Like, you can't say, you know, let's just kind of coast and let's try to get in with a 9th or 10th win, not look very good doing it, but then when the playoffs come, let's give them our best shot. Wow. They got destroyed by the Saints. And the last two home games for the Cowboys have been massive beatdowns by teams that they were favored to beat. Saints are a bit scary here after 2 weeks. They play Philly this week. That's going to be interesting. They have gone from being a 1.5-point underdog in that game to now a 2.5-point favorite. That is massive, sharp betting action on the Saints. It's not the public betting the Saints. It is sharp money moving that. So far, by the way, Derek Carr has been outstanding. He only threw 16 balls, though. He only completed 11 passes. The guy that is off to an incredible start so far is Alvin Kamara. He's got basically, he's averaging 100 yards a game, 5.7 yards per carry. He's got 4 rushing touchdowns. He's also got another pass receiving touchdown where he's averaging 13.1 yards per catch. He's an elite all-around back when they've got some stuff around him. And they had some dysfunction there recently. It looks like Clint Kubiak is on the verge of figuring it out. That's an impressive win. Beating Carolina in week one, 47-10. But going to Dallas to beat the Cowboys that way against a defense that I think people think is pretty good. See what happens. They got the Eagles this week. The Saints have, listen to this, Denton, right? They get the Eagles this week at home. Then they're at Atlanta in a huge division matchup. Then they're at Arrowhead. And then they play Tampa at home. Pretty incredible. I mean, count the Cowboys in there. That's an incredible stretch for a team that looks so good. These are going to be very intriguing matchups over the next 4 weeks. You know, matchups that nobody was thinking about 2 weeks ago. That's the NFL. You know, no one had New Orleans being a 91.2-week scorer, 2-0, and looking like the best offensive team in the league through 2 weeks. Nick Sirianni, you know, look, Philly is a tough sports town, okay? That's a legitimate, tough media market when it comes to sports. We're not. You know, we're not easy, but we're far from Philly, far from Boston, far from New York, etc. So they were getting after Nick Sirianni after the game for his decision to throw the football, which, again, it was not a pass call. It was a run-pass option. He could have thrown it out in the flat to Saquon, or the quarterback could have run the football because he wasn't going to throw it if it was covered and risk an incompletion. The play worked. They just didn't catch the football, although it would not have been the way I would have approached it. I would have said, I'm not taking any chance of the clock stopping. Less time for Atlanta is much better than more time. I'm going to run the ball maybe twice. I might tush-push it twice to get 3 yards, which I think they probably would have gotten. But Nick Sirianni, after being grilled after the game on Monday night, was grilled again yesterday.
We wanted to. They were running a certain defense and junking it up in the middle. So we're trying to go on around the outside, and it didn't work.
What was your thought pattern there on going kicking the field goal 43? Did you think about going for it?
Again, in that scenario, I was thinking they might not have any timeouts there, but obviously they did with the incomplete pass. That would have came down to maybe a minute. And so we wanted to go up 6 points, you know, and it didn't work. So, you know, the decision to pass it there, again, like I said, you know, where they were junking it up inside, with it being fourth and three to go for it, I thought, you know, with them not having any timeouts, I wanted them to be down a touchdown and see if they could drive the field, and they did. Hats off to them.
There was another part to that where they pressed him on the incompletion, and they asked him whose call it was, and he said, well, it's, you know, the play call was Kellen Moore's, the offensive coordinator, and then he looked at the reporter and said, are you, if you're trying to, you know, start something with, you know, Kellen Moore and myself, no. And he said, well, whose call was it ultimately to do it? And he said, well, I'm the head coach. And so it got a little testy there. Look, you know, his admission that they had a minute 40 left on the clock and that's why they kicked the field goal is precisely why on third down they should have run a play that guaranteed the clock roll. Then fourth and three becomes a different possibility, although, quite honestly, I didn't have a problem with him kicking the field goal. I know some of the analytics people leaned in the direction of going for fourth and three. I know why. We talked about it yesterday, the idea that teams are much more conservative when they're down three and they only need a field goal than when they're down more than three and need a touchdown. Yeah. I would have run the ball. I would have given it back to Atlanta down six if I didn't get the first down with 55 seconds to go and said, good luck on scoring a touchdown in 55 seconds. Now, as it turned out, they scored a touchdown in about a minute and did a pretty good job of getting down the field. Anyway, I wanted to read this just off of the conversation in the opening segment. Several of you have tweeted in, and I guess we have a Window Nation poll of the day, Denton's idea. Go to at Team 980 to vote on today's Window Nation poll of the day. Is Terry McLaurin a true number one wide receiver? Yes or no? You can vote there. But this from my guy, the incomparable CJ. Sheehan, I'm with Seth, who emailed about Terry earlier in the show, and various others that have contacted you about Terry. Here's a good example. Look at Nico Collins the first two seasons. Super pedestrian. Insert Bobby Slowick and CJ Stroud. Now you called him, Nico Collins, elite yesterday. Yeah. I did. And here's what I would say. You're right that Nico Collins with Davis Mills at quarterback, and who else did they have at quarterback? I forget. In the 2 years without Bobby Slowick, pedestrian numbers. His first two seasons in the league, mind you. He was also, you know, a rookie in 2021, second year guy in 2022. But Nico Collins and Terry are two totally different physical beings. Nico Collins is 6'4", 230. Like, this is a physical freak. I get it. Terry hasn't had quarterbacks, hasn't had a coordinator. And hopefully, with a much better quarterback and a much better coordinator, he will produce bigger numbers. And I think that that's a good bet. I still would not say that Nico Collins is equal to Terry McLaurin. Nico Collins is a 6'4", 230-pound physical freak who gets massive separation. And maybe he was doing that in 2021 with the Houston Texans when they had, you know, Davis Mills was one of the quarterbacks, but here are the quarterbacks that year. They played Davis Mills and Tyrod Taylor in 2021. In 2022, they played Davis Mills, Jeff Driskel, who's on our team, Kyle Allen at quarterback. Who was the coordinator? I don't even know who the coordinator in Houston was in that major downturn, like we were. We beat them, though, didn't we? We went to Houston in 2022 and actually won. I think they're different receivers, physically and otherwise. But, again, Terry's got a chance to have a much bigger year. And one catch, one overthrow would make the numbers look completely different. And for a while would have made that game look different in Tampa. All right, when we come back, we'll get some Denton news. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com.
Hitting the news you might have missed. It's Denton's Daily News.
All right, Denton, what do you got?
All right, we're going to start with the story that dropped literally about 5 minutes ago. It's a big basketball story. Don't normally talk a lot about a basketball story in September, but here we go. Adrian Wojnarowski leaving ESPN. He's famous for the Woj bomb.
Woj is leaving ESPN?
He's leaving ESPN.
Going to The Athletic, I bet.
He is not. No, are you kidding me? Shams works there. He can't go to The Athletic. Oh, he's true. Instead jumping over to college basketball. He's going to become the general manager for men's basketball program St. Bonaventure. It's worth noting that he did go to St. Bonaventure. His role is going to include name, image, and likeness allocation, recruiting, and then supporting the head coach in Mark Schmidt.
Wow. That's got to be pay decrease, right?
Massive pay decrease unless Bonaventure is boosters.
For those that don't know, the information guys, NFL, NBA, MLB, especially when they have massive social media followings, they make outrageous money. I know Schefter does. I know Rappaport does, the NFL guys, and I think Woj does.
Definitely does. I mean, he's ESPN's main guy. He has 6.5 million followers on Twitter.
Yeah. Huh. Interesting. These general manager positions for college sports programs have become a thing here over the last couple of years with NIL, with Portal. You know, it's essentially a GM that manages kind of the cap money, if you will, for the purposes of putting it in sort of, you know, using the analogy to pro sports, and then also the free agency guy, you know, like who's in the portal, what's he worth, etc. That's the job now. There's a GM job for these college basketball and college football programs. Recruiting, I still think, is primarily handled by coaches, you know, the assistant coaches in particular. But the portal is like free agency. Like we've talked about, college athletes now have something well beyond what people wanted them to have for years, and well beyond what pro athletes have, which is unrestricted annual free agency, unless they end up committing for more than 1 year. But that opportunity exists for every college athlete. And so the portal is the way you change your team each year. You know, it's a whole new way of doing business. So it's like free agency. And so he's going to handle that. Look, he's a basketball guy. He's an NBA guy. Interesting. There's no chance he's not taking a massive pay cut to do that, right?
Yeah, I would imagine a substantial pay cut. He does offer something.
St. Bonaventure, A-10 still?
Yeah, they're A-10. He does offer the ability, though, to connect guys that are in the portal with top-tier agents, get them involved with teams in a way that nobody else really does, because that's the people that have been giving him information for years. So he has those connections immediately.
He knows every agent.
Everyone.
And well. And, yeah, I mean, I guess that'll be part of this. Yeah, I mean, look, it's a school, St. Bonaventure. I mean, what kind of budget do you think St. Bonaventure has? St. Bonaventure's in the A-10 schools are the schools that are losing players that can play to much bigger programs with big NIL collectives and NIL budgets.
And they don't have a football team, I don't think. So that, like, their budget, they are very much a basketball school.
Yeah, every A-10 school is. I don't think any A-10 school plays football. Am I right about that or not?
I think Richmond is in the A-10, and they play football. Yeah, so there's a few, but there's not a lot.
Yeah.
All right, Major League Baseball, Nats get rocked by the Mets last night, 10-1. Bad night for Mitchell Barker. He doesn't even make it to the fourth inning. 5 runs on 7 hits, just 1 strikeout. This was not a good performance.
Nope, and you had a game in which Dylan Cruz went 3-for-4, which was outstanding. But you couldn't generate any runs You got shelled with your starting pitcher. These are big, big games for the Mets, man. You know, as you look at the schedule for the Nats the rest of the way, I mean, there are teams wanting teams like Washington on their schedule the rest of the way, right? I mean, the teams that are in playoff contention, and this is one of them, the Mets. They've got Kansas City coming up. Philly should have everything wrapped up by the time they get to their season closing series against the Phillies. But, yeah, the Mets, they've lost 2-2. They play the Mets again tonight, I think. And right now, because I'm pretty sure the Braves lost last night, so I think the Mets now have a one-game lead. Yeah, the Mets and the Diamondbacks now have two-game leads on the Braves. The Mets have reached the number two spot in the wild card race. Two clear of the Braves, as are the Diamondbacks, who have lost 2 in a row. The Braves have lost 3 in a row. It'd be amazing if the Braves are not in the postseason, because they were certainly one of the favorites to get to the World Series, you know, along with the Dodgers in particular. Wow. That Met team really turned it around.
Back to the Woj thing real
Kansas
quick.
Kansas City, by the way, the series that they've got coming up with the Nats will be huge for them, because they're in a wild card race as well. And the Nats have the Royals in town next week. I think it's Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, or Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, something like that. Go ahead.
Real quick, back to the Woj thing, just because I found some numbers. So in 2022, assuming nothing contractually has changed, he signed what looked to be a 5-year, $35 million deal. Now, these numbers are never fully gospel when it comes to reporters.
Say that again. Sorry.
So in 2022, it looks like he signed somewhere in the neighborhood of a 5-year, $35 million deal with ESPN. St. Bonaventure's has an endowment as a university of $92 million, $92.3 as of 2021. So maybe that number's risen a little bit, but I can't imagine it's risen substantially. So, yes, he's going to take a drastic pay cut taking on this job. But if it's his passion,
yeah,
and he wants to be involved.
There's no way that they're paying him $7 million a year.
No chance.
No way.
No chance.
For that job. Yeah. Well, good for him if this is really, you know, his alma mater is important to him. He's a basketball guy. He can really help. You know, and I'm just trying to think the problem, you know, when you do, when you make a move like that in like a normal professional move where you're taking a lot less in compensation, which let's just guess that he is, you usually do that because you're getting a piece of the upside. Mm-hmm. You're getting equity, you're getting stock options, and, you know, you're with a company that's paying you less, but you think the company is going to get sold or it's going to go public in a few years and you're going to make millions off of the equity piece you have. Well, there's no equity piece in a college basketball program in the A-10. So I don't think that there would be. Maybe there are incentives, but that's an interesting move. Interesting move. Maybe we're wrong, too. Maybe somebody in that NIL group said, this guy is the guy you want and we'll pay him what he was making, or a little bit more. You could always get that scenario, too. What else you got?
All right, final thing for you here. Jalen Reagor posted a meme yesterday. Remember, he was signed with the New England Patriots. He posted a meme on Instagram. The meme was, it's a very famous meme. It's been passed around a thousand times. It's a very nice sports car parked in, not even a garage, but an overhang of like a kind of a rundown house, signifying that he feels like he is really good, and the offense for the Patriots is really not good. He's a sports car, they're a rundown operation. An hour after he posted that, he got cut by the New England Patriots.
Yeah, Gerard Mayo is not messing around with this stuff. You can tell already the New England, the Belichick era continues in terms of discipline. Jalen Reagor, for everybody that wants to say Howie Rosen, you know, is playing chess and everybody else is playing checkers, they took Jalen Reagor in the 2020 draft, one pick before Justin Jefferson, and four picks before Brandon Ayuk. Anyway, all right. Up next, Dan Pizzuta does a great job with the 33rd team, and he wrote something about Jaden Daniels' first two games that was pretty interesting. We'll ask him about that next. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, theteam980.com. We're free and live on the Odyssey app.
I'm John Oran, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity. I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media. Available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.